interference activities. This for that. In his summation on Thursday night,
this is special coverage from NPR News. We're hearing the first day of the president's defense
of his intelligence agencies regarding foreign interference, and instead decided that he would listen to people that he trusted, and he would inquire about the Ukraine issue himself. Mr. Schiff did not like the fact that the president did not apparently blindly trust some of the advice he was being given by the intelligence agencies. First of all, let me be clear. Disagreeing with the president's decision on foreign policy matters or whose advice he's going to take is in no way an impeachable offense. Second, Mr. Schiff and Mr. Nadler, of all people, because they chair significant committees, really should know this, and they should know what's happened. Let me remind you of something. Just 0.6 of a mile from this chamber sits the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, also known as the FISA Court. It is the federal court established and authorized under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act to oversee requests by federal agencies for surveillance orders against foreign spies inside the United States, including American citizens. Because of the sensitive nature of its business, the court is a more secret court. Its hearings are closed to the public. In this court, there are no defense counsel, no opportunity to cross-examine witnesses, and no ability to test evidence. The only material that the court ever sees are those materials that are submitted on trust, by members of the intelligence community, with the presumption that they would be acting in good faith. On December 17th, 2019, the FISA court issued a scathing order in response to the Justice Department Inspector General's report on FBI's Crossfire Hurricane investigation into whether or not the Trump campaign was coordinating with Russia. We already know the conclusion. That report detailed the FBI's pattern and practice, systematic abuses of obtaining surveillance order requests, and the process they utilize. In its order, and this is the order from the court, I'm going to read it. This order responds to reports that personnel of the Federal Bureau of Investigation provided false information to the National Security Division of the Department of Justice and withheld material information from the NSD, which was detrimental to the FBI's case in connection with four applications to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. When the FBI personnel misled NSD in the ways that are described in these reports, they equally misled the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. This order has been followed up. There's been another order. It was declassified just a couple of days ago. Thanks in large part, the court said, to the Office of Inspector General's U.S. Department of Justice, the court has received notice of material misstatements and omissions in applications filed by the government in the above-captioned documents. DOJ assesses that with respect to the applications, and it lists two specific docket numbers, 17375 and 17679, if not earlier, there was insufficient predication to establish probable cause to believe that Carter Page was acting as an agent of a foreign power. The president had reason to be concerned about the information he was being provided. Now, we could ignore this. We could make believe this did not happen. But it did. So as we begin introducing our arguments, I want to correct a couple of things in the record as well. That's what we're doing today. We really intend to show over the next several days that the evidence is actually really overwhelming, that the president did nothing wrong. Mr. Schiff and his colleagues repeatedly told you that the intelligence community assessment, that Russia was acting alone, responsible for the election interference, implying that this somehow debunked the idea that there might be interference from other countries, including Ukraine. Mr. Nadler deployed a similar argument, saying that President Trump thought, quote, Ukraine, not Russia, interfered in our last presidential election. And this is basically what we call a straw man argument. Let me be clear. The House managers, in over a 23-hour period, kept pushing this false dichotomy that it was either Russia or Ukraine, but not both. They kept telling you the conclusion of the intelligence community and Mr. Mueller was Russia alone with regard to the 2016 elections. Of course, that's not the report that Bob Mueller wrote focused on Russian interference, although there is some information in letters regarding Ukraine, and I'm going to point to those in a few moments. In fact, let me report to, I think we'll talk about those letters right now. This is a letter dated May 4th, 2018, to Mr. Yuri Lysenko, the general prosecutor for the Office of the Prosecutor General of Ukraine. It was a letter requesting that his office cooperate with the Mueller investigation involving Ukraine issues and issues involving Ukraine government or law enforcement officials. It's signed by Senator Menendez, Senator Leahy, and Senator Durbin. I'm doing this to put this in an entire perspective. House managers tried to tell you that the importance, remember the whole discussion, and my colleague, Mr. Papura, talked about this, between President Zelensky and President Trump and the bilateral meeting in the Oval Office at the White House. As if an article of impeachment could be based upon a meeting not taking place in the White House, but taking place someplace else, like the United Nations General Assembly, where it, in fact, did take place. Now, Dr. Fiona Hill was quite clear in saying that a White House meeting would supply the new Ukrainian government with the, quote, legitimacy it needed, especially vis-a-vis the Russians, and that Ukraine's viewed the White House meeting as a recognition of their legitimacy as a sovereign state. But here's what they did not play. Here's what they did not tell you. And I'm going to quote from Dr. Hill's testimony on page 145 of her transcript. These are her words. This is what she said under oath. It wasn't always a White House meeting per se, but definitely a presidential level meeting. You know, a meeting with Zelensky and the president. I mean, it could have taken place in Poland, in Warsaw. It could have been, you know, a proper bilateral in some other context. But in other words, a White House level presidential meeting. That can be found on page 145. And contrary to what Manager Schiff and some of the other managers told you, is this meeting did in fact occur. It occurred at the UN General Assembly on September 25th, 2019. Those were the words of Dr. Hill that you did not hear. This case is really not about presidential wrongdoing. This entire impeachment process is about the House manager's insistence that they are able to read everybody's thoughts, they can read everybody's intention, even when the principal speakers, the witnesses themselves, insist that those interpretations are wrong. Manager Schiff, Managers Garcia and Dennings relied heavily on selected clips from Ambassador Sondland's testimony. I am not going to replay those. My colleague, Mr. Papura, played those for you. It's clear. We're not going to play the same clips seven times. He said it. You saw it. That's the evidence. Ms. Lofgren said that You know, numerous witnesses testified, and this is a quote, that they were not provided with any reason for why the hold was lifted on September 11th, again suggesting that the president's reason for the hold, Ukrainian corruption and burden sharing, were somehow created after the fact. But again, as my colleague just showed you, burden sharing was raised in the transcript itself. Mr. Schiff stated here that just like the implementation of the hold, President Trump provided no reason for the release. This also is wrong. In their testimony, Ambassadors Volker and Sondland said that the president raised his concerns about Ukrainian corruption in the May 23, 2019 meeting with the Ukraine delegation. Deputy Defense Secretary Laura Kraft testified that she received an email in June of 2019 listing follow-ups from a meeting between the Secretary of Defense Chief of Staff and the President relating specifically to Ukrainian security assistance, including asking about what other countries are contributing, burden sharing. That could be found in Laura Cooper's deposition, pages 33 and 34. The president mentioned both corruption and burden sharing to Senator Johnson, as you already heard. It's also important to note that, as Ambassador David Hale testified, that foreign aid generally was undergoing a review in 2019. From page 84 of his November 6, 2019 testimony, he said the administration did not want to take a sort of business-as-usual approach to foreign assistance, a feeling that once a country has received a certain assistance package, it's something that continues forever. They didn't talk about that in the 23-hour presentation. Dr. Fiona Hill confirmed this review and testified on November 21, 2019, I'm again, quote from page 75 of her testimony, that, quote, there had been a directive for a whole-scale review of our foreign policy assistance, and the ties between our foreign policy objectives and that assistance. This had been going on, actually, for many months. So multiple witnesses testified that the president had long-standing concerns and specific concerns about Ukraine. The House managers understandably ignore the testimony that took place before their own committees. In her testimony of October 14, 2019, Dr. Hill testified at pages 118 and 119 of her transcript that she thinks the president has actually quite publicly said that he was very skeptical about corruption in Ukraine. And then she said, again, in her testimony, and in fact, he's not alone, because everyone has expressed great concerns about corruption in Ukraine. Similarly, Ambassador Yovanovitch testified that they all had concerns about corruption in Ukraine, and as noted on pages 142 of her deposition transcript, when asked what she knew about the president's deep-rooted skepticism about Ukraine's business environment, she answered that President Trump delivered an anti-corruption message to former Ukrainian President Poroshenko in their first meeting in the White House on June 20th, 2017. NSC Senior Director Morrison confirmed on November 19, 2019, at page 63, in his testimony transcript, that this was during the Volker-Morrison public hearing, that he was aware that the president thought Ukraine had a corruption problem. His words again, and he continued, as did many others familiar with Ukraine. And according to her October 30th, 2019 testimony, Special Advisor for Ukraine Negotiations at the State Department, Catherine Croft, also heard the president raise the issue of corruption directly with then-President Poroshenko of Ukraine during a bilateral meeting at the United Nations General Assembly, this time in September of 2017. Special Advisor Croft testified she also understood the president's concerns that, quote, Ukraine is corrupt because she has been, this is her words, tasked to write a paper to help then NSA head McMaster, General McMaster, make the case to the president in connection with prior security assistance. These concerns were entirely justified. When asked, and again a quote from Dr. Hill's October 14, 29 hearing transcript, certainly, these are her words, eliminating corruption in Ukraine was one of, if the central, goals of a foreign policy. Now, does anybody think that one election of one president that ran on a reform platform, who finally gets a majority in their legislative body, that corruption in Ukraine just evaporates? That's like looking at this, and goes back to the Mueller report. You can't look at these issues in a vacuum. Virtually every witness agreed that confronting corruption would be at the forefront of U.S. policy. Now, I think there's some other things we have to understand about timing. This, again, is according to the testimony of Tim Morrison. His testimony. And this is when President Zelensky was first elected. These are his words, concern about whether he would be a genuine reformer and whether he would generally try to root out corruption. It was also, at this time, this was before the election, unclear whether President Zelensky's party would actually be able to get a workable majority. I think we're all glad that they did. To say that that's been tested or determined, that corruption in Ukraine has been removed. The Anti-Corruption Court of Ukraine did not commence its work until September 5th of 2019, 121 days ago, 4 months ago. We're acting as if there was a magic wand, that there was new elections, and everything was now fine. I will not, because we're going to hear more about it, get into some of the meetings the vice president had. You'll hear that in the days ahead. Manager Crow said this, "What's most interesting to me about this is that President Trump was only interested in Ukraine aid." His words, "Nobody else. The U.S. provides aids to dozens of countries around the world, lots of partners and allies. He didn't ask about any of them, just Ukraine. I appreciate your service to our country. I really do. I didn't serve in the military, and I appreciate that. But let's get our facts straight." That is what Manager Crow said. Here's what actually happened. President Trump has placed holds on aid a number of times. It would just take basic due diligence to figure this out. In September 2019, the administration announced that it was withholding over $100 million in aid to Afghanistan over concerns about government corruption. In August 2019, President Trump announced that the administration and Seoul were in talks to substantially increase South Korea's share, burden sharing, of the expenses of U.S. military aid support for South Korea. In June, President Trump cut or paused over $550 million in foreign aid to El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala because those countries were not fairly sharing the burdens of preventing mass migration to the United States. In June, the administration temporarily paused $105 million in aid to Lebanon. The administration lifted that hold in December, with one official explaining that the administration continually reviews and thoroughly evaluates the effectiveness of all United States foreign assistance to ensure that funds go towards activities that further U.S. foreign policy and also further our national security interest, like any administration would. In September 2018, the administration canceled the $300 million in military aid to Pakistan because it was not meeting its counterterrorism obligations. You didn't hear about any of that from my Democratic colleagues, the House managers. None of that was discussed. Undersecretary Hale, again, his transcript, said that, quote, aid has been withheld from several countries across the globe for various reasons. Dr. Hill similarly explained that there was a freeze put on all kinds of aid. Also, freeze put on assistance because it was in the process at the time of an awful lot of reviews going on foreign assistance. That's the Hill deposition transcript. She added, this was one of the star witnesses for the managers, she added, this again not played, that in her experience, stops and starts are sometimes common with foreign assistance, and that the Office of Management and Budget holds up dollars all the time, including in the past for dollars going to Ukraine in the past. Similarly, Ambassador Volker affirmed that aid gets held up from time to time for a whole assortment of reasons. Manager Crowe told you that the president's Ukraine policy was not strong against Russia, noting that we help our partner fight Russia over there so we don't have to fight Russia here, our friends on the front lines in trenches and with sneakers. And this was following the Russians' invasion of Ukraine in 2014. The United States has stood by Ukraine. Those are your words. While it's true that the United States has stood by Ukraine since the invasion of 2014, only one president since then took a very concrete step. Some of you supported it. And that step included actually providing Ukraine with lethal weapons, including Javelin missiles. That's what President Trump did. Some of you in this very room, some of you managers, actually supported that. Here's what Ambassador Taylor said that you didn't hear in the 23 hours. You didn't hear this. Javelin missiles are serious weapons. They will kill Russian tanks. Ambassador Yovanovitch agreed, stating that Ukraine policy under President Trump actually got stronger. Stronger than it was under President Obama. There was talks about sanctions. President Trump has also imposed heavy sanctions on Russia for President Zelensky thanked him. The United States has imposed heavy sanctions on Russia. President Zelensky thanked him. Manager Jeffrey said that the idea that Trump cares about corruption is laughable. This is what Dr. Hill said. They didn't play this. Eliminating corruption in Ukraine was one of, if not the central goal, of U.S. foreign policy in Ukraine. Let me say that again. Dr. Hill testified that eliminating corruption in Ukraine was one of, if not the central goal, of U.S. foreign policy in Ukraine. If you're taking notes, you can find that at the Hill deposition transcript 34:7-13. Dr. Hill also said that she thinks the president has actually quite publicly said that he was very skeptical about corruption in Ukraine. In fact, he's not alone. She said this as well. Everyone has expressed, again, great concerns about corruption. Ambassador Yovanovitch, they didn't play this. She also said we all had concerns. National Security Director Morrison confirmed that, quote, he was aware that the president thought Ukraine had a corruption problem, as did many other people familiar with it. I am not going to continue to go over and over and over again the evidence that they did not put before you, because we would be here for a lot longer than 24 hours. But to say that the President of the United States was not concerned about burden sharing, that he was not concerned about corruption in Ukraine, the facts from their hearing, establish exactly the opposite. The president wasn't concerned about burden sharing. Read all of the records. And then there was Mr. Schiff saying yesterday, maybe we can learn a lot more from our Ukrainian ally. Let me read you what our Ukrainian ally said. President Zelensky, when asked about these allegations of quid pro quo, he said, I think you read everything. I think you read the text. He says, we had a good phone call. These are his words. It was normal. We spoke about many things. I think, and you read it, that nobody pushed me. They think you can read minds. I think you look at the words. I'm going to yield the balance of my time to my colleague, the Deputy White House Counsel, Pat Philbin. He's going to address two issues. So we're going to try to do this in a very systematic way over the days ahead. One involving issues related to, because this came up near the end of there, so I want to do this in a sequence, obstruction as it relates to some of the subpoenas that were issued. He's also going to touch on some of the due process issues, since it was at the end of theirs and fresh in everybody's mind. Mr. Chief Justice.
So Jay Sekulow, the president's personal attorney, longtime attorney, yields the floor now to Pat Philbin, as he said, who brings his own binder to make his own presentation.
Mr. Chief Justice, Senators, Majority Leader McConnell, Democratic Leader Schumer, good morning. As Mr. Sekulow said, I'm going to touch on a couple of issues related to obstruction and due process. Just to hit on some points before we go into more detail in the rest of our presentation. I'd like to start with one of the points that Manager Jeffries focused a lot on towards the end of the presentation yesterday, related to the obstruction charge in the second article of impeachment, because he tried to portray a picture of what he called blanket defiance, that there was a response from the Trump administration that was simply, we won't cooperate with anything, we won't give you any documents, we won't do anything, and it was blanket defiance, really without explanation, that was all there was just an assertion that we wouldn't cooperate. And he said, and I pulled this from the transcript, that President Trump's objections are not generally rooted in the law and are not legal arguments. And that's simply not true. In every instance, when there was resistance to a subpoena for a witness or for documents, there was a legal explanation of the justification for it. For example, they focused a lot on an October 8th letter from the counsel to the president, Pat Cipollone, but they didn't show you an October 18th letter, which is up on the screen now, that went through in detail why subpoenas that had been issued by Manager Schiff's committees were invalid, because the House has not authorized your committees to conduct any such inquiry or to subpoena information in furtherance of it. And that was because the House had not taken a vote to authorize the committee to exercise the power of impeachment to issue any compulsory process. And I'm going to get into that issue in just a moment. Not only was there a legal explanation, a specific reason for every resistance, not just blanket defiance, every step that the administration took was supported by an opinion from the Department of Justice, from the Office of Legal Counsel. And those are explained in our brief. And you, the major opinion from the Office of Legal Counsel is actually attached in our trial memorandum as an appendix. Now, Mr. Jeffries and other